You're listening to Unique Leaders Podcast. I'm Megan DiMartino. Success is in the story. Each week, I'll be speaking with a unique leader, not only in their field, but in their lives. Join us for a glimpse of their passion and talents. There's always a surprise in their story. Be the first to hear. Hello, 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 and welcome to Unique Leaders Live. I'm Megan DiMartino, and it is Friday, and so very excited to have you with us as we have our guest share his story, Rick Austin. But in a minute, we'll bring Rick in, and he will share his Unique Leaders story. I just wanted to say hello to people that have never been on Unique Leaders. Again, I'm Megan DiMartino. I'm your host, and I am a lifelong creator of beauty and a mentoring spirit. I have built several businesses in the beauty industry, two skincare lines, Glycolique, a pioneer in glycolic acid alpha hydroxy skincare, medical grade, which truly revolutionized skincare, and Novitas Spa Clinicals. And then I, in 2005, opened a clinical medical spa. And in the pandemic, I was approached by someone, and this person asked if I was interested in selling my spa business. So after a lot of soul searching, I decided I was going to, because it was time to evolve again and to really help you, because my passion and purpose has really been tied to you forever in helping you identify your dreams, goals, and aspirations, your vision, your mission, and taking action. And this show, the Unique Leaders Live, started during the pandemic when I started interviewing people that I knew who had stories to tell. And it so resonated with people, and I decided that it was going to continue on. And so the success of individuals is in their story. And each person has a unique story, and they're absolute leaders as you are. And what I want you to do is sit back and listen to Rick Austin's story and identify yourself, because I hear also often, I could never do what you do. How did you do what you do? Things like that. And I ask everyone that I interview and visit with, you know, that I'm sure you're asked the same thing. And honestly, you will see yourself through Rick's story from beginning to end. So know that it is never too early or too late to create the life of your dreams. So without further ado, I would like to introduce my very special guest this week, Rick Austin. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Megan. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so humbled.
My pleasure, truly my pleasure. I have gotten to know you over the last year or so, and it has been just a joy, Rich. Rick, I know a Rich, and all these Ricks and Riches, but it has been a joy to get to know you. And the thing, as I shared in my introduction, that Unique Leaders really started out of a time and a season when people needed hope, and they needed, you know, to see there were possibilities even during this very challenging time. And so I just continued on with it, and people love it. And so what I'd like to do, without me babbling on, we have put in our, you know, material on Facebook and social media, your bio, but I don't want to babble on here about your story. So let's start with young Rick and where you grew up.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Megan. What an honor and privilege it is to share my story. I've been asked to share my story a couple of times. And so what an honor. I grew up in Chicago. I grew up pretty much on the south side of Chicago. I'm from a family of six siblings. I'm sorry, five siblings, total six of us. I have an older brother. Mm-hmm. I have four sisters that are younger than me. Two of those are twins. And so, yeah, we grew up on the south side of Chicago. You know, I like to say a traditional family home, but maybe it was non-traditional in the fact that even though my mom and dad were together when we, you know, when I was first born, probably by the time I was 13, mm-hmm. They had already separated and divorced, and probably leading up to that, it was just one of those broken homes. Mm-hmm. But my mom did a, I think, a phenomenal job to the best of our ability to try to try to keep us siblings together. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very much a part of my mother's life, who doesn't, you know, pretty much lives up the street from me. And while I don't hold any remorse, any type of regret or any type of hurt feelings toward my father, from that time, we've never really been able to spark a relationship. And so it just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
And so he is still living.
Yes, he is still living, and he still lives in the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. But we've just never really had a relationship. And I think maybe my siblings would have a kind of a similar story. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You went from growing up in Chicago, and yeah. Did you go to college right out of high school, or did you go into I don't want to share where you went. I want you to share that. But
sure, I'll do it. Yeah, no problem. Well, just prior to talking about some of those dynamics, mm-hmm. because of the dynamic in our family, my mom really wasn't able to take care of all of us as some way. So then extended family like chipped in, which I owe a lot to my grandmother and mm-hmm. an uncle, my mother's brother, who really took on kind of a legal guardianship role of us. But during that very turbulent time in Chicago, I would have went to 4 elementary schools and 4 high schools. Mm-hmm. And the last high school that I went to would be about 40 miles away. And me and my brother had made the decision that we're going to finish our high school years at this particular high school called Bloom Trail in South Chicago Heights. So that would have meant that we had to travel. We had an address in that proximity, mm-hmm. but that would have meant that we had to travel, in this case, from the west side of Chicago. So we would take the train, the elevated train, and then 2 additional buses to get to school. And we did that for the last 2 years of high school, and I couldn't have done it without my brother.
Right.
And
vice versa, too, I'm sure, meaning it was that connection together. You did it together.
Yes, because I probably wouldn't have been able. It was a very challenging time. Growing up in Chicago, what you hear about Chicago, mm-hmm. Being the segregated place it is with the problems that exist. Those problems kind of existed back then, except we have a lot more media coverage now. Mm-hmm. But by the grace of God, I was able to have a different outcome there, and so was my brother. So, you want me to continue on from there?
Well, you finished high school, you and your brother, and then did you go to college?
Not right away. The intention is that I would kind of enter into the workforce a little bit. And now I'm older now, and I decided I was going to help my mom. And so I had like probably 2 or 3 different jobs out of high school, not with any real direction, but the intention was to provide some financial income mm-hmm. because I was actually living back with my mother. Mm-hmm. And that only lasted for about a year. But it would be in that time that one of those jobs, I met a gentleman. We'll just say he was a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman was actually going to college, but he was actually working at a department store when he wasn't going to college. And he was also doing some things that I come to know and getting to meet him that were illegal, because this gentleman was selling drugs, but not on a corner. He was at a different level mm-hmm. of selling narcotics. Mm-hmm. But that's not the way I got introduced to him. We got introduced because we were at the same department store, and he just decided that he would get to know me and I would get to know him. And things were really tough for my family, right? Those 3 jobs didn't really amount to much money. And my mom it was just a tough time. Mm-hmm. And I had toyed with the idea, because it was presented to me. Mind you, I never did any drug, even to this day, I've never had anything other than prescription drugs or vitamins in this body. But I had that. I definitely had toyed with the idea of, hey, could I possibly do something like this to help my family out? And it was a trying time. But because I was very close to my mom, I actually shared with my mom what I was considering doing. Mm-hmm. And of course, my mom was 100% against that. And it would be maybe shortly thereafter that I'd be walking past a recruiter station, and I just thought, let me go in there and see what they're offering. I mean, I graduated at the top 10% of my class in school. When I tell you I was like on a fence for making a decision, it was because it was a really trying time.
And I get it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I didn't know I had any other options.
So that's, I want to stop for a minute, because what you're saying to our viewers, you know, there's so many times that we get to those crossroads in our lives. And like you've said many times now, you've repeated the same words. It was a trying time. I can feel it in my spirit, you know, because I was a single parent myself. And so I can feel it. And so, but you being a conscientious individual and caring person, you said, I need to help. And at that crossroads, thank God you shared with your mother, because you might have gone into corporate drug sales, you know? Yes. But then because of that crossroads, it's like that movie Sliding Doors. You saw then the recruiter sign and went in. So continue. Yes.
And so I can remember where I was at. If you're familiar with Illinois, I was just on the border of Chicago in Oak Park River Forest. And it was in the recruiter station in Oak Park River Forest that I walked in and said, hey, I stopped with the Marines and the Air Force and the Army. And it was the Army who took more of an interest in me in that time. And so, you know, you go through all the process of getting tested, and then getting selected. And I pretty much qualified for almost any job that the military had at the time. And so I made a decision that I would go into the military. I didn't ask for permission. I think my mom would have said, she probably wouldn't have approved of it. When she found out that I signed up, she really didn't approve of it, because she just had a mindset about the military that was, I think, just kind of jaded. But I like to say it was the best decision ever made for me. You know, I walked past that recruiter station, I think, by the grace of God. But as the story unfolds, and we'll talk about, I think I'll be able to not that I have to prove it, but I think I'll be able to put on display that it was the best decision ever made for me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so glad I took that opportunity. I enlisted in 1989, mm-hmm. as an enlisted soldier. I started off in basic training. I'm sorry, in the reserves first. I didn't immediately go into the active duty until about 6 or 8 months later, when I went through basic and I went through my advanced individual training. I started out in the nursing, in the medical side of things, which is pretty much, you know me, Megan, that's true to form. Like, I love people. I love taking care of folks. And so it's very natural to start to want to do a job that involved like something medical. Mm-hmm. And so I would do the basic training and then the advanced individual training, which was more on the medical side. And then I would come back home and I would feel like, what did I just go through? I'm in the reserves now, and now I'm doing 1 weekend a month, and I don't feel the same that I felt when I was going through my training. Like, and so it wouldn't be long. I mean, a period of maybe 2 or 3 months after getting back, that I decided to go on to active duty. I would have to take the test again, but I wouldn't have to go through basic. And as long as I met those requisite test scores, I could do the same job. And so in 1989, I went overseas to Korea on active duty for my first tour as what they call a preventive medicine specialist. Hmm. So
Now, as you use the term nursing, did you then get specialized training in that? Yes.
It would be about, and that is a bit of a fast forward. That's kind of like the culminating. I actually had maybe three different military occupational specialties in the medical field, mm-hmm. but the last of which would be nursing when I went through the Army's Licensed Practical Nursing Program, which was a year and a half long course that culminated with me taking the national exam for a licensed practical nurse. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through the training, but you still had to take this. I still had to take the state exam for Texas in this case. That's where I went through training. Mm-hmm. But in that period of, because we just jumped, if I jumped to nursing, we just went fast forward almost 10 years.
I see. Oh, yes.
Probably want me to back up just a little.
No, unless there's nuggets that you want to share from it. But no, I mean, that's the overview of, you know, from going in and then, like you said, going from reserve to active duty and training, but staying in that medical genre and that medical field in the Army.
Yes, in the Army. And so I also did what we call float crew nursing. There were times when I would go to the local hospital and because I had a license, I could, during my off-duty time, I could work in local hospitals.
I was going to ask, could you do that today? If you...
Because I started doing other things in the military I had to let my nursing license lapse. It's one of those things where you have to keep up with the time. Yeah. And so... But having said that, I mentioned something about Korea, and I just want to say, Korea was my first tour in the Army. It was the worst year of my life in the military because I was the young kid that knew everything. Mm-hmm. you would think basic and advanced individual training would have worked out some of the weirdness in my mind. Mm-hmm. But in that first year, the only great thing that came out of Korea was I met my wife, who I'm still with after almost 30 years.
Yes, sir.
It would be at the end of, almost at the end of my tour that our paths crossed. I had no idea we'd be getting married, but I knew when I saw her and we talked that she could possibly be the one for me. And so she would leave and go back to her hometown, her country in England, and then I would leave and go to a next duty assignment in West Point, New York. I think really God had intended for us to meet, and after that, my career got a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, there's like Korea, West Point. That's quite a change. Just the locale and so forth, but also better for your wife, I'm sure, being from England to come to the West Point. I mean, when she became your wife later on. Yes.
We great thing you mentioned there about we didn't get married right away. It would be almost a year later. Mm-hmm. We didn't have cell phones, as you know. Mm-hmm. There was no internet. We kept a long distance relationship through writing letters, and I would call. So we, in my letter, I'd tell her when I was going to call, right? So and at some point, because I was assigned to West Point, I was not a cadet at West Point.
Right, I assumed that. Right.
I did apply for that while we were dating, and I did get accepted to attend at least the United States Military Academy Preparatory School. West Point was actually going to send me there because I said my life had changed when I got to West Point. Part of it was for Nick, and the other part was, and I truly believe this was my, there were some folks that took an active interest in me and introduced me to Jesus, that, you know, who I profess to be my Lord and Savior. And it was at West Point that a lot of things began to change for me. And so I wasn't really thinking about asking Nick to marry me. I was thinking about, how can I be this great soldier? And so I had applied for West Point, and West Point themselves had said, yes, we will send you to the prep school, and then you'll come back to West Point. And so I accepted that. But what happened was I also invited Nick to come visit with me, and then I would go to England and visit with her. And it was in the time that I went to England to visit with her that I just felt like, I don't think I could live without this girl. Mm-hmm. And so I asked her when I went to visit England and met her family for the first time. That would be like around the 6 month mark of our relationship.
Oh, wow.
And she said, I'll marry you. I mean, I would love to marry you, but you got to ask my dad. So I had to ask Jim, my father-in-law. He was on board.
Sure. But, although you're a Yankee, I mean, that meant she would leave, but, you know.
Yeah, that was tough because Nick was kind of, is also from a broken home, and she's very close to her dad, too. So for her to there, you know, they had never really met me. Here yeah. I am here. All they know is what she's told them about me. Mm-hmm. And so I was grateful that I could, like, that they could see the same thing.
Yes.
But then I had to give up West Point. At that point, when I asked Nick to marry me, I had to give up West Point because you cannot be married and be a cadet. I had to tell my folks that invested in me that I really think that it's in my best interest to marry this girl. So while some people were kind of upset, mm-hmm. Because they saw some leadership traits in me that they thought could be brought out by West Point, I think God had a different plan. Mm-hmm. We got married at right about the year mark of us being together. And then she came to West Point. I was still working at West Point. And then we just started doing life.
And doing life in the military means moving.
Mm-hmm. Nick actually counted this. You know, we spent almost 26 years on active duty. Mm-hmm. And we moved 25 times. And some of that is, hey, you get to a new location, they don't have housing available, so you got to live on the economy. But then housing comes available, so then you move on posts. Mm-hmm. So hopefully save some money, or vice versa. So some of those involve short tenures in locations, but that was the life of a soldier. Mm-hmm. In order to get promoted during that time, you really had to move around and be willing to move around. Mm-hmm. And your family had to be okay with that.
Yeah.
We spent, I'll just say, you know, we spent 3 years at West Point. So now we've tacked on four years of me being in the military. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when I told you that my life had changed at West Point, because somebody had took enough interest to tell me about Jesus and that he could be my personal Lord and Savior. You got to know, when I heard that, that took me back just a little bit in the memory of before I even met Nick and before I even left Chicago, because I can remember being in a phone booth when they had phone booths, just broken about the circumstances in our life and saying to a God who I really didn't know, Lord, I've heard about you. If you can do anything to change, let it start with me. Let a legacy begin with me. Because I really grew up on just brokenness. So to hear about Jesus for the first time and that I could have a personal relationship, that's really what changed my outlook and my perspective and my motivation. And then I remember reading this one particular scripture that says, to remain as you're called. And I'm like, well, I'm a soldier. Right. And then you can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. I'm like, well, man, I think I could be a really good soldier. And then while I was at West Point, I was what they call a soldier of the month. These are competitions, soldier of the quarter, soldier of the year, non-commissioned officer of the quarter. Everything just started to change for me. I had Nick with me. Mm-hmm. Our first son was born there. That experience at West Point culminated with me going to getting selected for the licensed practical nursing program. And so here we are moving out to Fort Sam, but also Fort Bliss to complete that training. So yeah, a lot had changed for me, but I think a lot of it was because when I walked past that recruiter station, like God knew what I needed. He knew I needed this route, this fork in the road.
Well, you had already asked in the phone booth.
Yes, you're so right. It takes me back to that all the time, because when you ask, you don't always think that you don't think that there's a God who's even hearing you. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't grow up with a relationship with Christ at all. Matter of fact, I thought that Christ was like, I really thought this was like a white thing, because I see all these monuments and stuff like that and in neighborhoods, and none of them was kind of reflective of me. Mm-hmm. And so I just didn't know, because nobody ever really told me. But I think God was setting that stage,
mm-hmm. yes,
for it to unfold how it is. Mm-hmm. It's been unfolding, so
it continues to unfold. And so you, you also were deployed during these many moves. And I guess after, like you said, your nursing career took a different direction, and you went into another direction in the military. So why don't you share a little bit about that? Because
yeah.
Male viewers, I think that they didn't find this very interesting.
Sure, yes. Well, one of the things that I really love about the military was training. And I was pretty good. I worked my way up the ranks to being in the enlisted side, to being what's called a staff sergeant. Mm-hmm. So I also did the drill sergeant piece, where I was a drill sergeant for a couple of years. That's something that you laterally do. Mm-hmm. If you're asked to do it, or if you ask to do it, the military would love to have you do it so you could train soldiers. And so it would be after my nursing that I spent the next 2 years as a drill instructor, went through that course, did really well. And then I started training brand new soldiers in the military. But then after those 2 years, I'm like, well, Lord, what do I do next? Like, I wasn't sure, because the medical side of the military was going through a huge transition. And I think I had met all the gates to make in my next two ranks. And I just felt like there was something missing there. And so I got the opportunity to apply for and get selected for the United States Army flight school training. So that meant two things. That meant that I was leaving the medical side, but I was also leaving the enlisted side of things. I would, after my drill sergeant stint, I went to Fort Rucker, Alabama, and as a warrant officer candidate, I would go through the 6-week warrant officer candidate program, graduate from that very humbling course, mm-hmm. and then I would start flight training as a U.S. Army helicopter pilot. And that training would take me a little over a year to complete that training. I graduated again at the top of my class. I'm going to keep highlighting some of those things, because mm-hmm. apart from my relationship with the Lord, I don't think I would have been in anybody's top of anybody's class, but my motivation was
different. Please do highlight those things, because again, it's to show people that it's about that heart, that will, that desire to continue to better and to continue on.
Yes. And so I really wanted to be this great soldier that the Army could be proud of, but my family could be proud of. Mm-hmm. So I would spend, after flight school, I would start flying an aircraft called the UH-60 Blackhawk. And I would fly that first in Germany. I took my family to Germany from flight school. But I feel like I kind of left them. By this time, Jordan has been born. So now we have Nick, my wife, of course, and Julian and Jordan, and now we're in Germany together. I kind of like, because of all the deployments, I didn't see them that much when I was in Germany for those 3 years, because we were doing a lot of training, but then we were also deploying. Like, I deployed to Kosovo to do flight missions out there. I would deploy to Iraq. And so those 3 years were kind of a blur for me. Mm-hmm. Now I'll say this, that brought some problems. That's when you hear about problems with soldiers and their family members, that's usually because the requirements of the job. Mm-hmm. And that was a time, of course, when 9/11 happened. Mm-hmm. And so we were ramping up for good reasons. Mm-hmm. But that definitely brought some gaps in the relationship, which thank God, by 2004, we were able to mend. But it wouldn't come without some sacrifice and some challenges. And we look back now and say, well, thank God that we stuck together during that time. Mm-hmm. And we think it's because of the grace of God that we did. Mm-hmm. But I would finish my first tour in Iraq. I would come back to Germany, get my family, and then I would bring them to Central Texas here in the Austin area. Mm-hmm. And then I would leave them again to go to Fort Benning, Georgia, because the reason I left Iraq without my unit, which I didn't mention, I left a little bit earlier, like a couple of months earlier, is because I got selected to attend the Officer Candidate School, the U.S. Army's Officer Candidate School, because it had always been my desire to one day be I was a warrant officer, but I always wanted to like lead soldiers. Mm-hmm. And God would make it so after about X number of years of me being in the military while I had some experience. So I would leave them in Austin, and then I would go to Fort Benning, Georgia for about 14 and a half weeks and do my training, but get commissioned as a lieutenant. And then I would come back to Austin, and the Army was so gracious, and God was so gracious, really. He used the Army. Is I didn't immediately have to go back onto active duty. They let me take a break to finish my degree, my undergraduate, because in the military, if you're motivated, you'll do one class here, one class here, one class here. And so I had a lot of college credits, not concentrated in any one particular area, mm-hmm. because we were moving a lot, which I was able to get a concentrated effort in Concordia University. Like, they picked me up. And so Concordia allowed me to do my college at their accelerated degree program. They did something that they had never allowed any other students to do that were working students, is they let me take extra classes because they realized that I wasn't really working. The Army had let me take a break while they still paid me, and all I could do was go to school. And I did really, really well. I graduated on two National Honor Societies, Alpha Chi, Alpha Sigma Lambda. Maintained a 3.67 grade average, was on the dean's list twice. And it was fun. It was a great way to honor my family too. You know,
how old were you at this point? How old were you?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I think I was in 35.
Yeah, I was in the 30s. So, because that's something I always share with people. And I think this is a good point to say this, is that, you know, people, and I mentioned this in my introduction, but, you know, I could never do this. I could never do what you do. But, and I'll also hear, you know, I'm 30 and I've been in a job for 10 years and I don't know what to do. Is it too late? Too late, you know, or I'm 50, I'm bored to tears. I've been in a career job, but I'm too young to retire. Is it too late? It's never too early or too late to create the life of your dreams. You know, and that's what you're sharing here. You're sharing that you were given that guidance by the Holy Spirit, but you had to do the work yourself, and keep open and listen and keep going. And the one thing I also I'd like to say is I do know your wife, and as a female, I will say that even though those times were tough. She amazes me of her, you know, a lady with a drill, you know, it's like Rosie. Yeah. So it's, you know, we all grow from what is given to us.
Sorry, my puppies are acting up.
Uh-oh. I was like, where are you going?
I'm not going anywhere. I just don't want them to interrupt us.
That's okay. Okay.
There we go. Okay. Sorry. I bet that's never happened on your show.
I would say that's a first. You have your children yet. Okay. But this is not, you know, Hollywood. This is
real life.
This is real life. Exactly. Yeah. So, but I really wanted to share that it's never too late to go back to school, to do whatever you, that is going to enhance your life, and do, but also stay in the, like you've said again, that it was important to you to continue to grow, and not only for yourself, but your career in the, you know, Army, but also your family.
Yes, ma'am. Well, it's the thing that drives me is legacy. Like we are going, like I'm going to leave a legacy, you know, it's, and in that phone booth, I was reminded to ask God for that. And then now looking back after those years, God being faithful to say, yes, I'm doing that, but I'm doing that every single day, mm-hmm. that you make a decision to live for me. Like the scripture that always just drives me is that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So, but I got to do it. If he gives me the opportunity to do it, I have to walk through it. Mm-hmm. He never promised me that it would be easy. He just said, it'll be worth it because of your legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's so important for my kids, for my wife and for my kids. You know, now we have Hadley, you know, so, you know, Hadley was not an accident. She was planned. Like God planned for Hadley to be my daughter, be my next daughter.
She was, you know, so, yeah.
And so, yeah, so every single step of the way, it's been every opportunity. I said, mm-hmm. well, Lord, if you open the door, then I'll walk through it, because I think it's so much bigger than me. I don't know the impact that it's going to make. But if I go ahead and walk through that door that's open to me and I put in the hard work and the effort, then it's going to pay off, and it may pay off for more than just me. Like God is never just one dimensional. So he's always thinking about that in which I asked him for, you know, which is a better legacy. And so I feel like we're living it.
I just want to share Sharon Lecter, who a dear friend who is the co-author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. She shares that to be number one in your field, to create maximum impact and live your legacy.
Yes.
And that's what you just shared, you know, that you're, as it evolves, you're living your legacy. So was it a difficult decision for you and I'm sure it was both you and Nick making this decision, but to leave the military after 27 years?
It was difficult for me, but it was not too difficult for me to please my wife. And the reason why I say that is because I promised Nick that if she ever wanted us to like call it quits, then we'd find a way to call it quits. Now, at the moment when we say that, we knew it would take a year, because you can't just walk into your commander's office and say, hey, I'm done now. it would take a year. But once we made that decision, then, I take that back. We made the decision twice. Initially, and then we pulled back on it, right? But then when we ultimately made that decision, it would be in 2014 that we retire. And I didn't, while it was tough because it's just, you're so used to that. And I retired at the rank of captain, but I was selected for my next rank. They dangle that carrot right when I was like on terminal leave. Say, hey, you just made the majors list. Don't you want to stay? But I'd already made a decision. And so we just went in that path. It'd be 2014 that we retired. Mm-hmm. And then Nick and I would open up, and this is kind of fulfilling her dream. We would open up a fitness business. We'd done some businesses online that were successful online, mm-hmm. with helping people out. But then we wanted to like open a full-fledged facility. And so we did that under the CrossFit Corporation. Although we had loads of experience, I'll just say that in a nutshell. Everywhere we went, Nick had all these credentials for fitness. I was a master fitness trainer during my time in the military when I was a drill instructor. So we had a lot of breadth and depth. We knew what we were getting into. So when we retired in 2014, we launched a business outside of Fort Polk, Louisiana, in Leesville, Louisiana. It was a CrossFit business. It's called CrossFit G23. And the reason why we had to launch it is because during that last year in the military, we had 50 people meeting at our house. We're like, we can't keep doing this outside our house, because one, we're on government quarters, and our neighbors or our other military members are kind of being upset. So, but God would open a door for us to get a building in Leesville that had been closed for 10 years, and the owners were not selling to anybody, but they decided to sell to us. And the business did so well that we would hire those folks that owned the building, because they were welders, to put an extension on the building for us, because we had ballooned up to almost 250 people running different types of classes. And of course, it wasn't just Nick and I. It's like God has sent us a bunch of people that were qualified to train. And so we probably had 10 instructors as well that we were really managing. But we knew we weren't going to stay there. We knew that Fort Polk was just going to be knew that our heart was in Texas, and we're going to be back to Texas. So we sold that business for profit at just the right time, at almost about 3 years in. Sold it to some locals, and we got back to Texas as quick as we could. We got back in this area. And then what did I do for work is I like, well, man, I really love Highway Patrol. I wonder, do they need any help? So I would apply for Highway Patrol and, of course, and Austin Police Department. And both of them would ask me if I would continue on through the process. I would accept Highway Patrol's offer and graciously turn down Austin, which I think Austin's a great police department. But then I would go through 6 months of resident training where I was resident. I wasn't at home. But I would see my family on the weekend. Did really well. And then I would, after those 6 months, I would be a highway patrolman for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I would do that job. And I was very much connected to my church during that time. Celebration Church was main campus, is headquartered here in Georgetown. Of course, we got other campuses. And I just really connected with the lifeblood of volunteering there, and the people on staff and other volunteers, and it just seemed to be such a great place. And then I was asked to apply for a position there, and which we prayed about, because I love doing highway patrol. Mm-hmm. But I also felt a strong calling to do this. And so I've been what we call a campus support director on staff at the church for a little over 2 years, but we've been at the church for 6 years. And really that's the director over all things safety related. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a rich blessing, and we do life here in this area. We love it. We love the church. We love you and all the other folks.
I want to ask you a question though, before we go into that.
Yeah.
Because there is a true tie together with everything that you have done to what you're doing currently. But there is such a challenge with the military when people get out of the military and finding their way. And because it's very clear why that is, I mean, at least to myself, because it's so structured. And like you said, you said, I love the training. So there's always opportunity to grow and to evolve and to learn. But then it's upon the structure of the military to offer that, and you accept it and do it. But when you get out, you have to be your own motivator. And is that one of the main problems with the individual after they get out of the military?
I just, you know, when you're in the military, it's always mission. It's always believing in something greater than yourself. Soldiers that don't capture that, they don't last very long in the military, because it's got to be greater. Like, you're a part of the whole. You're great. You're important, but you're a part of the whole. And when you're in the units, people, you know, you can identify because you're in that same unit, that battalion, or that higher regiment. I mean, and so everybody's focused. When you come out, you really gotta have something to, you know, when you're in the military, you almost think, this is eternal. I love this. This is like, I'm gonna do this forever, right? But everybody leaves the military. Mm-hmm. Everybody leaves. And so for me, I think what was really strategic and important is that we didn't just leave the military community right away. You know, when we got off of active duty, we set up, we started doing life, and I was still doing life with people that were still on active duty.
Yes.
But I had this connection / disconnection, but it was a healthy way of transitioning out for us. Mm-hmm. As I get back into that civilian, of which I'm not really familiar with, and the civilian life is not structured like that. You got to find that.
That's right.
And so for me, though, having something eternal in my life, like having Jesus in my life, it wouldn't matter where I go. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to take him with me. And that has some eternal value mm-hmm. and motivation for how I live, whether it's in the military or out. Mm-hmm. But you really do need to have this transition time mm-hmm. and it'd be okay with you not going cold. Like, you just don't want to go cold turkey, because a civilian life is never going to understand the military life. The military is never going to operate like the civilian life.
Right.
You know? So.
And I think also your relationship with your wife was a very, very important piece to that. Like you said, the 50 people on your front lawn doing their physical training, right? But your neighbors were your buddies in the military, and some of them were on your lawn doing their workouts. And so when you opened the gym, you know, like you said, you were right there. So I can see that being a very important piece, because as an entrepreneur, you have, and you've talked about doing businesses with your wife and having success. So you've learned the structure of business. So you applied the structure of business with the same discipline that you learned in the military. Because to be an entrepreneur, you must have discipline.
Yes, and I will tell you, Nick has been my everything in keeping us grounded mm-hmm. in that civilian life. You know, what I was really cautious about doing is not making Nick feel like she had to be confined just because we were at the Army took us somewhere. I'm like, honey, whatever you want to do, I want to support as best I can. We took that out into when we got out of the military. And I'm like, well, she's been doing life out here, and whatever I can do to help her be successful, mm-hmm. because she was so instrumental in me being successful in the military. Mm-hmm. I'm like, when we turn this around, whatever you need to do to be successful, I want to return, or more than return, the favor. Not that I could. There's some things that if Nick was not, I could never repair for being the loving person that she's been and the sacrifices. But now I feel like, well, it's her turn mm-hmm. to do these things that God's had on her heart to do. And she's been tied to the civilian life her whole time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Well, the term of a woman behind the man, I've had the blessing to observe the two of you working together. And it's truly, I can see, you know, I've just recently gotten to know you, and it's very clear that the relationship that you both have is part of the success that you both have. It's very clear. It's beautiful to watch. It's beautiful to watch.
Thank you. I keep saying that she keeps renewing my contract. This year, we'll celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary. I don't know if she's putting stuff in my non-alcoholic beverages or whatever, but she keeps renewing my contract. So I'm like, great. I got another year with the woman I love.
Well, during the lockdown, one of the things that I so look forward to was your shenanigans together, doing all sorts of, a karaoke type of things at like midnight, the best of Nick and Rick. But it was great to watch.
That was our pleasure. We got a lot of feedback from our friends. Mm-hmm. And even if they didn't know, they're like, thank you so much for doing that. That made my day.
It really
made our day too. So
it was really great. So now you're at Celebration, and which is a wonderful church here in the Austin market metroplex, and Georgetown was the first church. And I moved to Georgetown in 2004/5, I went to Celebration Church when it was at Chisholm Trail. And so then I was part of the team that, you know, I wouldn't say I had anything to do with it, but the opening of the church on the hill, you know, that story, that profound story, it's in itself, you know, of God's grace and just, you know, providence guiding us to things, you know.
If you were to ask our senior pastors, Megan, Pastor Joe and Pastor Lori Champion, mm-hmm. if you were to ask them whether you had something to do with it, they would say, absolutely. Celebration just celebrated its 20 years of being a church. And it started in Austin with It Is Austin, and it's grown. The main campus is in Georgetown, but there's a campus in Central Austin. Mm-hmm. There's a hub campus that meets currently in Holmes, but also gets together once a month, called our mm-hmm. Southwest Campus. But we have campuses in Mozambique, Africa, champions from K to 12 in Mozambique, Africa.
Italy.
And in Italy, in Caserta, outside of Naples. We have a campus there that's, I mean, just all the campuses are thriving, even during this pandemic. It's just been a big blessing for Celebration and maybe churches like Celebration to have a heart towards people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so honored and humbled and privileged to be working and serving there and serving our community at the same time. Everything has a season. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna ride it till the wheels fall off, until God tells me to do something else. Because it is my legacy. If he never tells me to do anything else, then I'll be doing this. So
absolutely. And with your 100%. And I, as you're speaking, I'm thinking how the synergistic with all of your background, bringing it to, you know, the church world. It's just really beautiful to see that as well, to help people help themselves. It's really important. Well, as we close this, I'm going to ask you, like I ask every guest, the same questions. And they are tied to a book, 3 Feet from Gold, written by, I mentioned Sharon Lecter earlier, and Greg Reed. And it's part of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. And Napoleon Hill himself was an amazing motivator and just a prolific writer. But this book, what it essentially is fiction. And it starts off with a story of a gentleman buying a East Coast guy during the gold rush. And he had stars in his eyes and went west and bought a vein and, or a piece of land to chip away and find that gold. And so he started, you know, buying his tools and getting ready and started, you know, chipping away at this property. And it was a lot of work and very frustrating. And he continued doing it. And the townies were watching this guy as he was chipping away, and he was getting very frustrated. And so finally one day he said, I'm done. And he sold his property to this townie, and that guy jumped in and chiseled away, and in 3 feet hit a vein, 3 feet from gold.
Wow.
And so this man, it is fiction, but it's autobiographical on some level. But the latter part of the story goes into then modern day. But they took the piece of that from a guy that did happen. And he went back to the East Coast and started an insurance company and never gave up. But Sharon in the book has what she calls the success formula. And it is your passion plus talent times association times action plus faith equals success. Now, I'm not going to ask you each piece of that, but what I do ask each person is, what is your passion, Rick, and what is your talent?
Well, my passion is people, right? My passion is, like, how do I love people? And you said, what is my talent?
Mm-hmm.
I just took this Clifton StrengthsFinders test.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave me some more context. But no, I would have to say my talent is my ability to get things done. Like I think people say that a lot. Like, if you really want something done, like maybe you might want to give it to Rich. I think my faith drives that, the inherent responsibility that I take on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's my passion would be people. Mm-hmm. And then my talent would be the ability to get things done.
By the grace of God. And you've shared that throughout, excuse me, you have shared this essence of you, but it has just been honed and nurtured through all of these experiences of starting and not stopping and keeping on. Yes. Well, thank you, sir, for blessing us with your story. True story, a unique leader. And like you said, whatever you're supposed to do with that voice, you know, you will continue on with God's, you know, guidance, and whatever you will be doing it. So I look forward to visiting again and seeing what the Lord has bring to you.
Thank you so much, Megan. It's such an honor to be on Unique Leaders Live. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. So hang tight, go into the green room, and we'll be back.
All right, will do.
Thank you. Be blessed.
You as well.
Wow, what a story. And there's so much more I could have asked Rick, but I wanted Rick to share the essence of how he has taken a grown from potential being a drug dealer to turning away from that world based on a righteousness, so to speak, meaning it was really from helping his family was the motivation of that. It wasn't any negativity, but he would have led down a different road. We all have roads to travel. We all have journeys. We all have stories. And just listen to this again. There's so many nuggets of wisdom. There's so many nuggets of a truth in Rick's story. So what I would love you to do is to go to YouTube and subscribe, because we're building our YouTube channel, the Megan DiMartino channel. And I don't even know where we are today, but we started out at about 3, and you have to be at 100 for people to really find us more organically. So if you could, I know we've grown, but I would love you to go to YouTube and listen to this again and subscribe to this, but also share this a segment out, because there's so many people that are struggling today that possibly have been in the military, possibly have had similar stories to Rick. I'm going to have Rick back, because there's other things that I would like to have Rick speak to you about, because there's so many nuggets of richness that will help people through this period of time. So we will see Rick again. But if you could share this out on my Facebook pages, Megan DiMartino, official Megan DiMartino, but which is my business page, but also my personal page, because that's where it's played out of also, but we'd like to segment it over to the business page. And it truly will help. Put those stars up, put those likes up, and comments. I see Elizabeth here commenting, a lot of people coming on today, but the comments really help people find us as well. So if you could do that, that would truly be very helpful. You can also find these segments on megandimartino.com. They're always there. So if you've missed something or want to go back, because I've had the blessing to interview some amazing people that have amazing stories that, again, the secret of their story, or their success rather, is in their story. So go to there as well. So YouTube, and we'll do a replay of this on Monday, and then, of course, on megandimartino.com and the live stream. Have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you next week. I am going to have the amazing, the illustrious developer of and founder and creator of the Heal and Comfort shirt, the one and only Sherry Matthews, will be with us next Friday. So I'll see you during the week, but see you next Friday on Unique Leaders. Be blessed. Thank you for listening to the Unique Leaders Podcast. If we said something today that resonated with you, please connect with me at megandemartino.com. I have a free gift for you, my book, Hope and Possibilities Just Over the Horizon. It's never too early or too late to create the life of your dreams. And don't forget to head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. I would truly appreciate it. Be blessed.